This is the one where the TARDIS crashes inexplicably.
And nothing else happens.
For 40 minutes.
But there's paranoia.
And wild accusations.
And poor line delivery.
And the most disappointing end to an episode of all time.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Dalek, Stalinood, and the Cybertronic race.
Centaurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Punkin.
I'm Flappy.
Yes, he is. And today we are reviewing...
I've accepted it at last.
Yes, finally. Today we are reviewing the third ever Doctor Who episode, The Edge of Destruction.
It's got to be one of the most, well, not only mind-numbing, but also, like, mind-destroying things of all time, this episode.
Yes, it is. It is completely mind-destroying. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we literally just rewatched the episode together.
We could barely get through it.
I yawned a record amount of times.
Like, I've got to say, you know, I didn't hate it as much the first time. Like,
oh, I did.
I didn't. I
didn't hate the episode more this time, but I hated myself for rewatching it.
That's true. But I was quite intrigued the first time around because I thought it must be better than it is, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, as I was watching it, I was thinking, this must be going somewhere. And all these crazy little loops they were doing, that it must be leading up to something big.
And it follows on from a fantastic episode. The Daleks is a great episode with a huge budget.
One of the best ever.
Yeah. And it's followed by this absolutely horrendous bottle episode.
Well, anyway, let's start at the very beginning.
All right, yeah.
I mean, the reason we rewatched it is because we wanted to try and find some kind of narrative arc going on.
Yeah, here. Spoiler alert, we didn't.
No, it never emerged, but we tried. We actually sat down and took notes together, trying to, like, hash out something that happened in this episode that was tangible.
Yeah, and before we actually go into this podcast episode, I would like to say to absolutely everyone out there in podcast land, if you haven't seen this episode, just don't.
Yeah,
just listen to our podcast instead, because it is guaranteed to be more entertaining.
Like, however painful you find listening to this podcast, it won't be anywhere near as painful as actually watching this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Do you want to...
Well, I guess we can start off. I mean, it all takes place inside the TARDIS,
it does indeed.
Essentially. But the first thing that happens is there's a big wiggle and a boom. Everybody falls over.
Yeah, and faints.
And everybody passes out and faints. Yeah. And then for some reason, so it's Barbara wakes up first.
Wait. Let's not disregard the slapdash panning across the TARDIS before they wake up, where the cameraman is, like, I don't know, slipping over wires or something, because it just stops and
it just kind of goes up and down a little
bit. It's terrible. Yeah,
it's really bad. Well,
it's in a time before dollies.
As we were saying, as we were watching it, it seemed as though this was an episode that was recorded in between other episodes. Like,
you think this? I don't. I think this was recorded with the producers and the guy who wrote this. Whatever, I've already forgotten his name. I'm so glad, by the way. I think everyone on the production side of things told the cast, this is going to be such a fantastic psychological thriller.
Yeah.
This is basically
But that's the thing, it nearly was. Like, there were so many little directions they could have taken that would have made it a fantastic psychological thriller.
Like, second takes.
Well, like, yeah, that would have helped. there are like, modern-day Doctor Who. I can think of, actually, a couple of very good David Tennant bottle episodes.
Hmm.
So, like, you know the one where he's visiting, like, the tourist planet, and they're all stuck on a ship together, and there's a knocking outside?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's one of my favourite
episodes. The diamond thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of my favourite ever Doctor Who
episodes. Fantastic episode.
Yeah. Like, compare that to this. Ouch.
Yeah, you can't.
Ouch. Like, that did actually make you think something did kind of get inside, but it didn't. It was like weird. It was like, oh, you know, this was just horrible.
Like, a bottle episode traditionally is meant to be the episode that you record because you need to save on budget. Either you just spend lots of money, which they did on the Daleks, or you know that you will spend lots of money.
Making a seven-episode thriller. Watch it, people.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And listen to our podcast. But anyway, like, you know that you don't necessarily have enough money to sustain that level throughout the entire series, so you save money by doing a bottle episode.
Yeah.
Limited locale, limited everything, right?
So, yeah.
But it seems like they had a very limited script as well. It's almost as though they got a shock. Like, they did the Daleks, it was a huge success, but they got a shock when they looked at their budget and were like, fuck, we don't have enough money to continue this series.
Okay. There's nothing left.
Can someone write an episode? Oh, wait, here's whatever his face is. He's written 3 pages. Yeah, we can make that last for 40 minutes.
Actually occurred to me, it wasn't as if one person had written this episode. It was like a group of people got into a room and started brainstorming ideas, and then they just read out one idea after another, and then the actors just acted those ideas out, and those ideas bore no relation to each other.
It was like
the best way I can
it was like
it.
Someone taught a discarded piece of furniture how to write screenplays.
You know that game where you get a load of newspapers and you like rip them up, you rip up the headlines and,
yeah,
and you just like read them out one after the other? That's kind of what this episode was like,
yeah,
for me.
Oh yeah, no, it was the Mad Libs of Doctor Who. Anyway, okay, so that's enough derogatory dialogue. Let's actually get into the meat of this vegetarian episode.
Okay, well, let's try and make it quick. So, so basically, the ship starts a rumbling. Everybody passes out while they faint. They're all on the floor, and Barbara wakes up first. And for some reason, she can't remember who anyone is.
Yeah, she doesn't remember who Ian is. He's passed out in a chair.
Yeah.
Like, how did he land in a chair? They were all standing around.
Very
all
suavely.
Yeah, yeah, very nice. Like, he looks so debonair.
Was he in his smoking jacket?
No, that's later. That's later. Yeah, spoiler alert. There's a lot of
smoking jackets.
Wardrobe changes in this episode. But anyway, so yeah, she wakes up, then Susan wakes up.
Yeah, and Susan's got a terrible headache, and she can't remember who either of the teachers are, so she can't remember Ian or Barbara. The doctor's down this whole time, like he's just on the floor. Like they're wondering,
cutting his head.
Yeah, and they're wondering whether he's breathing. Like the doctor, like, is an elderly man, and like quite often, actually, in previous episodes, it seems as though he may have fallen, broken his hip, and possibly died.
Yeah. Susan, however, should be pointed out. Susan does recognize him.
Yeah,
she refers to him as grandfather. Goes down and like she and Barb kind of inspect his wounds.
Absolutely. But everything about the whole situation is erratic. Everything's happening erratically. The TARDIS doors are just opening and closing.
That's later. Dude,
That's what's happening now. The doctor's still on the floor, because don't remember Ian says, you know,
well, Ian hasn't even woken up yet. You're getting ahead of yourself.
He did it. Yeah. Oh. All right.
Okay.
Go back to Ian.
All right, fine. So Ian wakes up. He can't remember where he is. He thinks he recognizes Bob. And when
just
he goes,
as a teacher, though. He only recognizes her as being another teacher.
Yeah, he basically thinks that they're still in school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she makes some reference to Susan. He goes, oh, Susan Foreman, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he clearly thinks that they're still in school. And then he goes up to inspect the doctor, at which point he goes, his heart seems all right.
Yeah.
Singular.
Now, you made a lot of that.
Yeah.
While we were watching it.
I think this is just like, it's before the, I don't know, the story borders or whatever. The writers decided that, oh, actually, Gallifreyan people have two hearts.
But it is possible that Ian only found one heart. Bear in mind, in a previous episode, he tapped on a metal creature and thought it was made of stone. He's not great at inspecting things.
This is basically, I think it's criticism of of education in the UK, because he's a science teacher.
Like, people say standards are slipping, but clearly back in the 60s, you didn't have to be that good at science to be a science teacher.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, at this point anyway, the doctor wakes up, starts rambling, and Ian very cleverly points out, he's rambling.
But everything's going mad, basically. All of them are going mad. They forget things. They don't know where they are. Don't know what's going on. The TARDIS doesn't seem to know where it is. The doors keep opening and closing.
Yeah.
Like, all hell is breaking.
See, I disagree with you again. But I think we're going to discuss this after we've gone over the whole episode. I think the TARDIS knows exactly where it is, and the TARDIS is trying to tell them what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah. Then, oh, maybe, actually, you know what? Maybe this is an incredibly profound story, because
all of a sudden... I kept trying to weave the narrative into, you know, this kind of profundity that you're referring to. No. It ain't that.
Okay, well, anyway, so they notice that the doors are open, the TARDIS doors are open, and they start going like, oh, it looks like they've been forced open. I wonder what's going on. Bob goes like, maybe we crashed. Susan says the ship can't crash. We crashed! as many episodes
as there have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've seen two episodes so far. We've seen you crash twice.
The TARDIS crashes constantly.
Yeah.
It's almost like a crashing device.
100% of the time,
yeah.
It is not crashing.
Like, I don't remember it ever actually just landing safely at this point. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So basically the next thing that happens, Susan goes over to the controls, tries to see what's going on with the doors.
Yeah.
She touches it, she gets some sort of electric shock and faints on the floor.
Wait, hang on. Is this the next thing? I've made notes, yeah. Maybe. I don't know. But like at some point she thinks that something's gotten inside the TARDIS.
That's later.
Is that later?
That is later.
Fuck. All right.
That is later.
Okay. This episode makes no sense, ladies and gentlemen. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't make any sense. So anyway, she faints as a result of touching the TARDIS controls.
Yeah.
Cut to Susan in bed.
No.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Ian carries her.
What? No, before then, exactly. See, I knew it. I was right the whole time. Ian walks up to the doors, and they close as he approaches. Then he walks back, and they open. He walks to the doors again, and they close.
I'm really sorry I missed that out. Like, if I didn't include that in my brain's narrative of the story, Ian walking back and forth to the doors, I'm sorry.
You know what? I'm going to devise a new drinking game. Every time you say the word narrative, I'm swigging something.
How many times have I said narrative?
I don't know. We're going to play this back later on. Doesn't matter. Anyway, I see that as evidence of the TARDIS preventing them from going outside and harming themselves, but showing them where they are.
Dude. Later in the episode, they do clearly open the doors, and Susan looks out, and it's a really bad acting piece. You can't
no sense whatsoever.
But she's, like, looking directly out of the door.
There's nothing.
The TARDIS isn't stopping. There's nothing. It's just space.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, so whatever. The doc wakes up.
Yeah.
Ian, meanwhile, puts Susan in a quote-unquote a bed, which is...
A dentist chair.
It's a dentist chair. Like, do they not have beds?
Apparently not. None of them sleep in the bed. In fact, we never see the doctor sleep. I've only ever seen him pass out.
So there's no, like, cruising for chicks in a TARDIS, because, like, there are only these one-man dentist chairs.
Yeah.
That's it. And you very rightly pointed out, though I will have to go back and screenshot this later on, but you very rightly pointed out that we get to see a little bit of Susan's ass. Susan, by the way, looks exactly like Zach Braff in this episode.
Not exactly.
She looks exactly
like
Zach Braff.
Why only in this episode? Surely if she looks like
that. The hair.
If she looks like Zach Braff.
The hair and the look of her face that says, I have no idea what I'm doing and I'm in way of my head. Anyway... Ian puts her in bed, goes to get some water, and when he gets back, she's got a knife.
Well, it's really funny, that scene, because she's sitting there, like, completely like a statue.
Yeah.
It's not knife, scissors, isn't it?
Oh, is it scissors?
She's holding scissors, you know, in that backwards mental way. Like,
yeah.
She's going to plunge it into somebody's heart.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And she is completely motionless.
Yeah, like, until she tries to stab him, at which point she gets another headache, can't stab him, and instead stabs the dentist chair.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah.
So now we're down to random acts of vandalism.
Well, as we know, like her grandfather, it's a gene thing. She is a homicidal maniac.
She goes, who are you? And then tries to stab the bed to death.
Yeah, there's a fire burning inside of her.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gets the scissors and calms her down a little bit. All of a sudden, she's perfectly just right as rain.
Yeah. And it's at this point, so Ian walks outside. Obviously, he's quite upset by this whole situation.
And has a great exchange with the doc.
Well, the doc, at this point, he does his first bastard move of the episode. So he actually starts accusing them this early on. He says that Ian and Barbara are tampering with the equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. He also has the brilliant line, Ian asks him, where are we? And the doc goes, where isn't as important as why?
Yeah.
You're in a time machine, surely when would factor
in. Yeah.
But yeah, he accuses everyone of tampering with the machine and whatever.
Ian and Barbara, like, come back saying at that point they think something's gotten in. It isn't Susan that mentions it, it's Ian and Barbara. That's their initial explanation. But obviously they had to come up with something because the doctor was accusing them of... trying to crash the ship.
That's true. And while he's accusing them of stuff, Susan suddenly turns up. She's now had a wardrobe change. She's wearing some sort of black huggy.
Yeah.
And she goes and gets the scissors again.
And she's sweating like I've never seen anyone sweat.
It's actually quite impressive.
Like the effects department probably dumped a bucket of water over her face. No, actually, I reckon they Vaselined her face up.
Yeah, because she's shiny and beady.
And then dumped water. yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting look.
And then Bob goes to check up on her, doesn't remark on the fact that she's changed clothes, but notices that she's got the scissors, goes, give me the scissors.
She actually tries to stab Barbara.
Yeah, she clearly tries to kill Barbara as well, but Barbara's like, you know what, I kind of don't give a shit, so it's fine. Yeah. Takes the scissors.
And then Susan makes a very interesting comment, which at this moment did pique my interest.
Yeah,
I thought this might be an interesting episode. Mm. A bit like the David Tennant episode that we referred to earlier.
Actually, very much so.
She says, I think it might be hiding in one of us.
Exactly.
There's an intelligence on board that has gotten on board, and it's hiding in one of us. And
the first time I saw this episode, at that point I was thinking, oh, great, we're down for like an invasion of the Body Snatchers type story.
And I'm kind of thinking, well, this makes sense, because Susan is like demonic. She's like stabbing random things, has got this murderous look in her
eyes. And maybe there's just a tiny little fragment of Susan peeking out to say that something has invaded her.
It's like an intense psychological thriller, but that doesn't turn out to be the case.
Again, that's a complete nothing.
As is everything that happens thereafter, such as the backs of their heads are hurting.
Yeah.
So they've got headaches. We'll come on to why we think they might have headaches.
Yeah.
But
and it's not them falling down either, because Ian just slumped in a chair that miraculously appeared out of nowhere.
Yes. Yeah. But nobody can work out what's going on. Like, funny theories are being floated around. At that point, the TARDIS starts to give them a clue.
Yeah, the dog turns on the scanner
and weird places. Well, I say weird places. Like, it shows England.
It shows a postcard of England.
Then it changes to...
the planet something of the fourth universe or fifth universe, whatever.
The planet
Quintus of the fourth universe.
Yeah.
The fifth planet of the fourth universe. There you go.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, I recognize that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's really obvious.
And there's like a roar from outside.
Yeah.
And they're really scared. And then the picture changes to just a moon.
A planet. Or a planet. A moon or a planet. And then it pans out.
It's quote-unquote pans out. It fades to...
Another still image.
Yeah, to what is supposedly a galaxy, but that looks very much like a Jackson Pollock, and then a flash of light.
Yeah, and the Doctor seems to think this is a memory bank of places they have been to.
He
can't work out why it's
happening. I don't think so.
No. Well, like, it turns out that obviously isn't what it is. But
yeah, no, it's showing them, like, it's going back through time, right?
Yeah.
That's basically it. I don't know how the fourth planet of the fifth universe factors in, or fifth planet of the fourth universe factors in, but at first I thought there was a dinosaur outside or something,
yeah.
And it's going back in time, like it's showing present-day England, or 1963 England.
Yeah,
then like
time's getting a bit wibbly-wobbly, basically.
Exactly, going back in time,
fading.
And then the flash of light at the end is the Big Bang at the start, basically.
That's not what's happening.
That's not what's happening. No.
Once again, after this, I've just made note of what happens after the memory.
Have you written down
incident.
The actual line? Because I know what you're going to say next.
Well, actually, what I'm going to say, what I've written down, is Doctor makes wild accusations and shits all over lines.
Yeah. I just wrote worst delivery of line ever. We need to find out what this line is. Shall we? You know what? I think it might be time for a soundbite.
You're the cause of this disaster. And you're both not, sir. You're not both shooting and I am unconscious. Tell you,
oh my god. Oh my god, that is so so bad.
So bad.
You're unconscious, you're bored something.
Let's not concentrate on it too much, because there are so many incidents of that, it's hardly even worth it.
That's clearly
up.
In the top three, though.
Yeah,
that is clearly in the top three.
That is one of the best I've ever seen. There is a better one later in this episode, and we will play a soundbite of it.
Yeah.
But essentially, he, for no reason, thinks that it's entirely Ian and Barb's fault.
Yeah.
And he thinks that they're trying to tamper with the controls, and he actually accused them of knocking out the Doctor and Susan.
Yeah.
Like, actually physically, brutally knocking them over the back of the head. That's why they got headaches.
And he's really perturbed by this, even though he seriously just abducted them, has put them in so many life-threatening situations so far.
Yeah.
But it's like, you knocked us out!
And he has no evidence at all.
No.
Yeah.
But he's just paranoid. At which point, Bob... somehow just notices that there's a gigantic clock in
which
the room.
Which we've never seen.
We've never seen it before. She sees it and she gets a migraine.
Yeah. And so does Susan.
So does Susan. So does Ian. Ian also checks his wristwatch, which gives him a migraine.
Which is it's very blurry.
It's very blurry,
like,
yeah.
You can't see the time on it.
The Doctor doesn't seem to be affected, though. He walks away.
Well, that's only because he's not interested. He doesn't even seem to look at the clock. Like, both of the girls are almost falling over on the floor.
I don't think so. Here's my... Okay. Okay, I think it's because he, at this point, is even more convinced that they are to blame, which is why he goes into the background to basically prepare these roofies for everyone, because he's going to knock out everyone. So he disappears. All of a sudden, he comes back out, and he's got a tray of, like, paper cups, identical to the ones the Thal had, by the way.
Yeah. And, like, obviously something's up, because he's assigned a cup per person.
Yeah.
So it's not as if, take which one you like. It's like, oh, Ian, take this one.
No. Any, like, close-up...
Chesterton?
Close-up magicians in podcast land at this point will go, yes, I remember all the techniques of forcing cards on people. He clearly just goes, here, Barbara, take a glass, and, like, forces a glass in her face. And
basically, it's Rohypna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is roofing all of these people. They're all knocked out. But Ian then somehow wakes up out of, like, no, wait, they're knocked out and they go to sleep.
Actually, first of all, Ian goes over to the doctor and he's like, what the fuck? Like, because Barbara stormed off really upset, as you would. He's like, the doctor has accused her of, like, sabotaging the ship.
Trying to kill everyone. Yeah.
And Ian's like, I think you should apologise. And the doctor says to him, and I quote,
okay,
there's no time for that. And he thinks that apologising would be acting rashly.
As opposed to roofing people.
Then they all take the roofies, fall asleep, and the doctor laughs, this is my note, satanically.
Nice.
Like, really, it's like a little snigger. He actually puts his little fingers together.
He does this while Susan and Barbara are sleeping on, like, adjacent dentist chairs.
Yeah.
And then goes into the other room, at which point Ian wakes up and tries to strangle him, but then faints again.
He's not actually trying to strangle him, though. What he's trying to do at that point is stop the doctor touching the controls.
Really?
Yeah.
He grabs a chokehold of him.
Yeah, but he that's because he's practically passing out. Ian only has good intentions.
Like, God, you love Ian.
I love Ian. I'd like to marry Ian. He's such a good man.
Your babies could wear cardies.
Uh-huh. But he only has good intentions. Ian's almost passing out, and he goes over to the doctor, and he's trying to stop him going to the controls, because he doesn't want the doctor to get electrocuted. Old friend. A man might die.
Ah.
Yeah.
So instead of having him be electrocuted, he tries to suffocate him.
But the doctor, like the bastard that he is, assumes that this is Ian trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Barbara turns up. Bob goes, like, she, I don't know, accuses him of having hurt Ian. The doc kind of explains and emphasizes how Ian attacked him.
Yeah.
And then delivers another crappy line in the form of, and I quote, don't underestimate us, my dear.
And obviously Ian faints after he tries to chokehold him. Well, the doctor thinks he's...
Yeah, but then he kind of wakes up again.
Says, it's all a charade.
Yeah, it's all a charade. Yeah. At which point he decides he's now no longer going to poison them. He's instead going to kill them by exposing them to the outside.
Yeah, so the doctor at this point says, there's nothing else for it. I'm just going to open up the doors and leave them on this planet, wherever it is, whether it has oxygen, radiation, or whatever.
Yeah, and Barbara protests, but Ian, possibly so, in kind of a state of delirium.
I'll be okay once I'm outside.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, you're going to have to help me up on my feet, but I'll be just right as rain when I'm outside
the
TARDIS.
He makes the best of everything. It's like the British war spirit. It's like, oh, it's okay, there'll be some fresh air outside.
Yeah, space.
Yeah.
No air. Anyway, there's a roar again from outside the TARDIS, which, and then they start commenting, saying that the fault indicator...
Yeah, the doctor very cleverly works out that they're in danger, because the ship starts, like, putting up signs saying, danger. But from that, the doctor does make a very good deduction, which is that he says that they have 10 minutes left to live.
Yeah, well, we're not there just yet, though.
Is there something in between that?
Yeah, because at first, whilst trying to lift up Ian, Barbara is almost strangled by Ian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then, okay, so please note, this is a two-part two-part story.
Yeah.
The first episode, The Edge of Destruction.
We're right at the start of the second episode.
The second episode.
The Brink of Disaster.
The Brink of Disaster. And
It really is.
And then the doc explains that it is the brink of discussion.
Discussion.
Yeah. He wants to say destruction, but he says discussion.
Yeah.
Soundbite.
Yeah.
We're on the brink of disgrace, of destruction.
Oh, that's so good.
Yes, right.
I love that.
That is absolutely classic. But the bit we missed out, I think, so he gets the danger sign from, what's it called, the instrument?
It's either the fault locator, fault indicator, or falticator.
I think it's falticator. but the doctor reveals to Barbara and Ian that he doesn't now think it's their fault, and that he drugged them.
Yeah. And Ian's fine with it.
Ian's just completely cool.
He's like, I thought
as much. Oh, you rather thought I was up to some mischief. Well, yeah, he drugged me. You know, usually when you drug people, it's usually mischief of some kind.
Yeah.
A little stronger than that.
Then Barb has kind of an epiphany. She finally figures it out and she goes, that explains everything.
Yeah.
The clock. We had time taken away from us. Now we've been given it back. It's running out.
Yeah. So essentially, from the ship beeping and the falticator going, she has determined that TARDIS is now giving time back.
Which I don't understand, which is not explained.
And then makes the massive leap that time was taken away because she got a headache from looking at the clock.
Yep.
And that explains everything.
Really? Well, maybe you could rephrase that in layman's terms, Bob, because I'm not really catching it. But what is this?
But from this, I mean, the Doctor doesn't check any dials. He just sort of stares into the middle distance. And this has never happened on his ship before, bear in mind.
Yeah.
He knows at this point they have exactly 10 minutes to live.
Well, first, before that, he says the TARDIS stops. In fact, everything shakes a little bit, and he goes, the TARDIS has stopped. And to me, this was a bit of a weird moment, because I thought they had already stopped. Like, it crashed, right? Mm. But apparently it was still travelling back through time.
Yes.
And it stopped.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
We know it was.
And it stopped because there was, well, essentially, there was no time left, right?
Yeah, were going back to the start of a solar system.
Yeah.
And they got there.
So at this point, please explain
to
me.
The atoms were coagulating.
Yeah, he says the atoms are outside coagulating. So please explain to me, Flappy.
Like blood. Yeah.
The doc subsequently says, he says to everyone, yeah, we've got 10 minutes to survive.
Yeah.
Direct quote. If they've gone back to when there's no more time left, why would there be 10 minutes left?
Maybe it's the case that they've gone back to the start of a solar system, yeah? And the Doctor is so wise and learned about how solar systems start.
Like, 10 minutes to the Big Bang.
Yeah, there's 10 minutes until there's like a nuclear flare-up or something, and it will destroy the TARDIS.
Yeah.
Though nothing can destroy the TARDIS.
Exactly. But, well, more or less, right?
Yeah.
We've even seen the actual death of the TARDIS in Matt Smith times.
Yeah, but we don't actually see it die. We just see it dead.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. One might assume that it has died in order to be dead, though.
Well, yeah, but we don't see its death. We don't know how a TARDIS gets killed.
Okay, fair point. Anyway, at this point, there's another conversation, which I think is of interest, because he says, my machine can't think. And basically, the whole conversation is about how the TARDIS is just this gadget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas nowadays, the TARDIS has a personality. It has
see it in human form.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It has a face, it has a voice, it has everything.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's just this thing. Anyway, the TARDIS has stopped. The column, the wibbly-wobbly thing that goes up and down in the TARDIS is just in the down position. And he says it is holding down the power of a solar system.
Well, so let me.
Which is, I guess, the solar system outside, right?
For this whole, like, 10-minute period, I'll tell you what I wrote, just to try and sum it up.
Okay.
Crazy theories are proposed that bear no relevance to anything that's actually happening. Would you say that?
That's fairly accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we need to go into any more depth than that. But,
true.
Like, stuff is said about, like, TARDIS's bits going in and out, up and down, but it doesn't actually, like, matter.
Pan out or anything. Yeah. No, it's of zero consequence.
They're just wild, crazy theories stabbing madly in the dark.
So then the TARDIS doors, or he's going to open the TARDIS doors again, and he tells the woman and the girl to go to the door and look outside and tell him whenever there's...
Well, no, to tell him what they see.
That's true. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when he opens the doors.
Yeah.
And then he takes Ian to one side and he said, oh, I just sent them over there. We're all going to die, you know.
Yeah. we don't have 10 minutes left. We only have 5 minutes.
We have 5 minutes. And when the end comes, they won't know a thing.
Yeah. Which is actually kind of kind of.
Yeah, and Ian's like, oh, yes, all right.
All right.
Let's bear it bravely, stiff up a lip.
Yes, yes, that's very cricket.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and go like, what are you talking about? And the doctor just goes like, oh, it's one of my theories didn't work out. And Ian goes, oh, yes, well, you know.
We must get to the bottom of this.
Yes,
yeah.
we must figure this out. And then the doctor sees a pattern. He recognizes a pattern in these images that are projected on the scanner. The postcard of England, the moon or planet or whatever, the galaxy and Big Bang type yeah. thing. And he
and
basically...
he's like, oh, it's our journey.
Yeah.
And then he says, what? Like, it's a bit like Barbara's earlier comment of, oh, that explains everything.
Yeah, exactly.
What happens next? He says, oh, it's, yeah.
Oh, he goes, oh, wibbly wobbly, and then it's done.
Wibbly wobbly. I've got it.
Wait, excuse me. Say it with more gravitas, please.
I can't say this with any more gravitas.
Wibbly wobbly. Timey-wimey, backwards, future. And then all of a sudden, he's figured it out.
The ultimate fast return switch.
Yeah. So what he says, the wibbly wobbly thing is he goes,
and please bear in mind, people, we've been watching this episode now for like 38 minutes. Like, we've watched 38 minutes of stuff and here is what they present.
It is so good. But wait.
Do you want to say it?
Please, may I?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I can't wait.
Please,
but before we do that, we have to say the wibbly wobbly thing, what he explains, it isn't just like wibbly wobbly timey wimey. What he says is, Ian asks him, "What did you not know where you were going when we left Scaro?" And he says, "Oh, I just pressed the fast return button."
Yeah, he says Scaro was in the future, so all I did was to press the fast return button, pan to the fast return button, which is written on with felt pen.
It's written in a fucking black magic marker. It's a button on like the dashboard of the TARDIS, mm-hmm. and someone has, in black magic marker, scribbled, not written, mind you, fast return. It is mind-boggling.
They've actually written it fully. They've written fast return switch.
Oh yeah, you're right. Sorry, fast return switch,
which isn't a switch.
It's a fucking button. Oh my god! So, anyway...
Because if it was a switch, there wouldn't have been a problem, as you're about to explain.
So Ian goes, so what, you just press this? And the doctor goes, yes, I'm gonna press this. Wait, there's something wrong. Wait, let me get my glasses. It's really dark in here, and, like, it takes him a full minute while Ian is going, dude, we're fucking gonna die! We're gonna die! You need to just do something! And he's like, well, let me readjust my glasses on the bridge of my nose. What is this? And he realizes the button is stuck. He unsticks the button. It works. The TARDIS is once again operational. And it turns out the spring inside the button had gotten stuck.
And that was the reason for everything.
That is the deus ex machina of this episode.
Please, at that point, can we please just go back to other things that happened earlier in this episode?
Okay, yeah.
And see how they bear any relevance. So when Susan seems to be possessed by a demon,
yeah.
And she's trying to kill people, stab people, etc.
Yeah.
How could that have been caused by a switch being stuck?
Dude, like, I don't know.
So I know the switch being stuck, okay, in theory, that's sending them further and further back in time.
Yeah.
Because it's stuck. They wanted to go back in time, but they went more than they wanted. Why would that send her demonic?
Okay, here's my theory. I think, like I said before, I think the TARDIS is intervening. I think what the Doctor said is complete nonsense. It's hornswoggle. When he says... the TARDIS can't, my machine can't think, this is just a thing, he's entirely wrong, because the TARDIS is trying to save them. In opening and closing and opening and closing the doors, the TARDIS is telling them, listen, you can't go outside because you're going to die, but you should look outside because it'll
explain everything.
Yeah, it'll explain everything. And when they look outside the doors, they actually go, or Susan screams terribly, there's nothing out there, just space.
Mm-hmm.
the TARDIS also tries to show them what's going on by displaying all these pictures in an apparent pattern on the scanner screen.
Mm-hmm.
And the TARDIS is also giving them migraines every time they look at a timepiece in order to tell them that maybe time has something to do with this. As though the fact that they're in a fucking time machine wasn't a big enough clue.
I agree and understand all of that.
Yeah. Okay.
Why is it messing with them? Why does it make Susan demonic? Why does it mean that they all forget where they are, who the other people are? Maybe like at the start of the episode, Ian doesn't know.
Yeah, maybe who the Doctor is. Maybe it's like temporal whiplash. Like the fact that they've been brought back to the very start of the universe but is shock to the system.
If it was any of this stuff that we're saying,
you'd
think that they would at least at the end of the episode give a little nod to it.
Yeah, like, they don't know.
Somebody would explain, like, any of what just happened.
Mm.
None of it is explained at all.
No.
Which leads you to the conclusion that it is another cul-de-sac of reason.
It is, totally.
They're just leading you up blind alleys. It's,
Oh, this road doesn't lead anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Springtime!
It's just a series of red herrings. It's like cut-up newspapers, as I said at the very start of this podcast.
Hombre, can we please just say how this episode ends? Because it's a two-parter.
Okay. Well, it ends with, like, 8-minute descriptions of how springs work. To the point, the Doctor actually gets a torch out. And, like, Susan's like, oh, can you explain further? And he opens up the torch, and it's, like, obviously got a little spring in it. And he was like,
do you see
what would happen if this spring was fixed in one position the whole time? The light would simply stay on, would it?
Yeah, and Susan, who is a child, wunderkind, and knowledgeable as concerns the quantum theory, marvels at springs.
She is an astrophysics genius.
Yeah.
And she cannot comprehend the concept of, like, a rusty spring. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's part one, and it lasts 8 minutes. And then part two is the Doctor apologising to Barbara.
He doesn't actually properly apologise.
Well, he does kind of.
He goes,
Dude, to be fair, you were in the loo for this bit. He goes up to Barbara.
He gives her a coat. That's his apology. He hands her a coat.
You're a bit cross with me, aren't you? You know, for all those things I said and for trying to kill you and roofie you and whatnot.
But you are a silly woman, aren't you?
Yeah, and then he gives her a credit for having saved everyone, even though she had no part in it whatsoever.
So let's go back to what she said.
She says, that explains everything, the clock. We had time taken away from us, now we've been given it back, and it's running out.
That didn't explain it.
That explains literally nothing.
No.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Barb, I don't follow.
What?
But so he gives her complete credit in order to kind of appease her and calm her. And then, as the cherry on top, because she's a woman in 1963, he gives her a change of clothes, and she...
And she instantly smiles and hugs him. And takes his arm.
And they go outside where
and
it's...
And they have a snowball fight.
Yeah, it's snowing outside. That's basically it. They've landed somewhere where it's very cold. They need to wear coats. Ian is wearing a coat that's...
Sherlock Holmes. Oh, no, it was from Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, Gilbert and Sullivan. He's like, oh, it looks very nice on me. And the Doctor goes, oh, you know what? It looks much better on you than it ever did on me. You know, I was given that by Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah. Like some... Yeah.
Yeah, that's very funny. Very, very nice.
Drop.
And then they go outside into the snow, which is going to be the next episode, Marco Polo.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Anyway, should we get down to writing?
Yeah, wait, hang on. I don't want to be influenced by you. I'm going to write down what I think.
Okay, so how do you want to do this?
Just say. Well, okay, give me your rating and give me your... give me your rating.
I'll start off with a little review.
Okay.
Like, I've never been so disappointed at the end of something as I was at this.
It was
the poorest possible explanation for... I mean, I was wondering the whole way through the episode, how can they possibly tie all of this together? And then they made absolutely no attempt to do so.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been worse. Having said that, during the episode, there were certain moments where my interest was piqued. I was thinking it might be a psychological kind of thing, and it was working quite well at times. But in a way, that made it worse when you actually got the real explanation, and it was so, so very poor. So, overall, because I had those little moments of interest, I'm going to give this episode 0.9 out of 5.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I didn't hate it the first time around. The second time around, it was very painful. But the first time around, which is how I've got to try and review it, there were moments where I was taken in by the story.
Okay.
So it is getting a few point marks. The reason I went for 0.9 is because I can't bring myself to give it 1.
Yeah.
Out of 5. It's a 0.9 out of 5.
Okay, very nice. I was at first going to give this 0.7, but I changed that to 0.4. The reason for this is that, as you say, there are several clues, plot points are being introduced that, however, leads nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And all these plot points, while they seem intriguing for the moment, ultimately are incredibly disappointing.
Mm.
I'm giving this episode bonus points. Bear in mind, it would receive less than 0.4 had it not been for the following. Okay, in no particular order. The Doctor tries to roofie his companions and his granddaughter. Bullet point number 2. the worst stumbling over lines ever, which while giving the episode overall negative points, actually adds to the enjoyment of the episode, because while you can't enjoy this episode from an intellectual perspective, you can at least enjoy it from a derisive one. And what else? Honestly, I cannot think of anything. This episode makes no sense. It is the worst kind of bottle episode, and I think that it was written in 15 minutes. 0.4 for the Edge
less
of Destruction.
Less time than it took to record.
I think originally this was meant to be maybe a 10 to 15 minute TV spot during ad breaks, but instead they stretched it out to 45 minutes, and it shows. 0.4.
Okay, I see. I think you've been a little harsh, but I think we're pretty much in agreement that it was awful.
Yeah.
And made absolutely no sense whatsoever. But I guess I got more enjoyment out of the derision.
Okay.
Was all it came down to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I was very open to this episode. I just watched the Daleks, 7-part series, and I was so up for Doctor Who at the point I watched this episode. So I was really actually being taken in by things I really shouldn't have been, which might have added to the interest. But I've got to say, the first time I saw it, 0.9.
I hate myself for having seen this episode twice.
Yeah, never ever again.
I wish the TARDIS would take away that time and then give it back to me. All right.
On that note.
On that note.
Goodbye out there in podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to this in the future and there are tons of episodes of Who Back When already on iTunes and in the ether.
There's going to be like 300.
Yeah. Well, depending on where in space-time you're listening to this, then, please subscribe, rate, review, etc. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. And check out the website, whobackwhen.com. All right. Which catchphrase are you going to plagiarise this time?
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I think I already used cha-chow. Yep. So
you've done rock on as well.
Okay, so I am going to go for metal.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Shamalama ding dong, people.
Back when.